Good morning, everyone. Nobody ever said that UUs were not friendly and talkative. How are you today? That's good. It's a beautiful day outside. I'm Robin Crane. Welcome to First Unitarian Church of Alton. I welcome you into this hope, this community of hope and transcendence. Here we seek wisdom beyond our own experience, and here we open our loving minds to the mystery of wonder and the moral imagination. Here we transcend the day-to-day of our lives in order to seek for truths both meaningful and sustaining. Here we seek to offer a loving message that provides wholeness in a broken world. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer welcome to you, and in particular to those who are first-time visitors. We invite our first-time visitors to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of the gray hymnal that is in your pew and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. If we receive one from you, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at the church. We're awfully glad to see you here, and we hope to see you again on future Sundays. Every Sunday is different. We do have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 4 years. Through these doors to the left and out into the foyer, the nursery door opens right onto the foyer. Our religious education program begins when we bless our children and sing a recessional hymn for them on their way out, and it concludes at 11:30. At the front, we have a spirit chair right over here. Looks like something out of a medieval Catholic church, doesn't it? The spirit chair includes activities for all ages, even for adults. If it helps you to think while your hands are busy, come up and get an activity at any time. Children and youth are encouraged to attend the religious education programs when we sing and bless our children later in the service. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. And now I have a few announcements. If you haven't brought your donations for, this is from Mary Johnson. I know Mary's here this morning. Oh, she's going to be teaching Sunday school as well. If you haven't brought your donations for the personal care distribution next Saturday, there's still time to get them here. Becky Green is usually in the church office from 10 to 2, midday, on Mondays and Fridays. And the Kate Worker Room entrance door will be open from 2:30 to 5 p.m. on Thursday, because that's when the Alton Area Book Club meets here. So you can come at those times, midday on Monday and Friday, and 2:30 to 5 late afternoon on Thursdays, and drop off your contributions for us to donate on our or to distribute on our fourth Saturdays for the personal care item distribution. There's a shopping list for needed items available on the poster in the worker room. These are items that food stamps will not pay for, like diapers and toilet paper and shampoo and that kind of thing, which you absolutely have to need, but apparently our government doesn't think is necessary. And let's see if I have any more announcements. We are honored to have with us today in worship Reverend Julie Taylor, community minister in St. Louis. I am very happy to be able to meet you after hearing all these wonderful things. And our sermon will be offered by Leslie Butler McFadden. Did I pronounce it right?
You're good.
Of the Ferguson Response Network and the Black Lives Matter Visibility Campaign. Please recall that if you have announcements you want read from the pulpit on any Sunday, please write them as succinctly as possible and place them in that rectangular straw basket up there. There are some blank forms, and we will read them on Sunday. I guess that's about it. We will begin our worship with a prelude by Nicole Robbins. Our invocation this morning is adapted from one written by Reverend Ian W. Riddell. You will recognize the beginning words, I'm sure. Come, come, whoever you are. Do you hear that voice calling to you, calling us? That voice which calls us together today, here, in this room, made holy by our presence and by the sacred breath we share in our singing and our speaking and our silence. That voice which calls us to remember that we are not alone and that we are inextricably linked to all other life, woven into a vast tapestry of existence of which we are a powerful, integral, and holy part. And just as we have been called together here today, we act as the voice, the heart, the hands of another call, the call to walk with the wanderers, sing and dance with the worshipers, proclaim the memory of those who have taken their leave, wrap the despairing and the broken in the arms of love and community, support the activists, the fighters for justice, and hold the hands of all of us who have broken our vows, then call us back again and again to the covenant and the unending work of justice, humility, and steadfast faithfulness. For this, we are here together again today. So, my friends, come, yet again come. Let us worship together. Ben, will you light our chalice for us? If we can make the technology work. Let us say our chalice lighting words together. We light this chalice, symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation, the power of love to heal what is broken, and to be grateful for life's blessing each day. Our opening hymn is number 318 in the gray hymnal, We Would Be One. Please stand in body or in spirit and sing together.
Which finds our hearts and
seated. Our Time for All Ages story is an example of how we humans often fail to live up to the sentiments of that opening hymn, "We Would Be One." The story is "God's Hat" by Christopher Booth. I encourage you to put on your imagination cap, choose any color you like, and make pictures in your mind as the story progresses. The story begins, as many good stories do, with "Once Upon a Time." Once upon a time, there was a village with a road that went straight through the center of town. Can you picture it? One day, something very strange happened. God walked down the road, and she was beautiful. She wore a long, flowing robe, and on top of her head, there was a wonderful hat. Perhaps like one of those, or maybe that one, the red, white, and blue one. All the people stopped to stare at God as she walked by, and they kept staring until she disappeared in the distance. "Boy, God sure was beautiful," said one man, "and what a beautiful blue hat she had on." "Yes, God was beautiful," said a woman from the other side of the street, "but it wasn't a blue hat that she was wearing, it was a red hat." "You are wrong," said the man, "it was definitely a blue hat." As the two argued, others joined in the dispute. Soon the whole village was arguing. All the people on one side of the road were certain that God was wearing a blue hat, so maybe they should be wearing blue hats. And all the people on the other side of the road were certain that God was wearing a red hat. Old friends, even sisters and brothers, argued with each other. People got so mad, and they screamed at each other so loudly that a lot of them lost their voices. Finally, they got so angry that they decided to build a wall that went straight through the center of town so that they didn't have to associate with people who they thought were so wrong-headed. People even put sharp razor wire on the wall in some areas. From that point on, the people on one side of the wall were enemies of the people who lived on the other side of the wall, and they never spoke to each other. On one side of the wall, the people built a church where they worshiped a God who wore a blue hat, and they wore blue hats on Sunday mornings. On the other side of the wall, the people built a church where they worshiped a God that wore a red hat, and they wore red hats on Sunday mornings. Many years passed, and the people were still enemies. Then one day, God came walking back through the village. She looked like a healthy young girl this time, but everyone knew it was God. They could just feel it. She was smiling and balancing on top of a wall that the people had built many years ago. This time, she was wearing no hat at all. All the people ran to the wall and they cried, "You must settle our argument." "Yes," said one man. "The people on that side of the street say that when you walked through the village many years ago, you were wearing a blue hat. But we know better. We know you were wearing a red hat. So tell us, God, what color was your hat? What political party did you support?" God looked puzzled for a moment, and she began to scratch her head and thought, "You know, I think I remember walking through this village many years ago," said God, "and on that day I believe I was wearing my hat that is blue on one side and red on the other." And saying nothing more, God continued walking along the wall until she disappeared off into the distance. There she goes. It was really quiet in the village for a moment as people thought. Suddenly there was the sound of one child laughing. Then another child started laughing, and then others. Soon the whole village was roaring with laughter. Everyone was laughing because they realized how foolish they had been for years. As the sound of laughter grew louder and louder, the wall began to shake and crumble. Make it shake, Ken. Thank you. Soon, some of the people rushed in to help tear down the wall. Some of us remember when people helped tear down the wall in Berlin. I even have a piece of it. So they helped tear down this wall, breaking huge holes in the wall big enough for people to walk through. Soon, brothers and sisters, fathers and children, moms and uncles, all crossed the ruins of the wall to embrace family and friends they hadn't seen for years. They were so overjoyed to see their old friends and relatives, you can imagine. And finally, the entire wall came tumbling down to the ground as people from both sides of town cheered with happiness. For many, many years after that day, the people told the story of God's hat and how laughter had torn down the wall between a divided and foolish people. Please remain seated as we sing that song, Go Your Way in Peace, that we sang last week. And the children and their religious education teachers can leave as we sing. Let us meditate for a few moments on those things that are on our hearts. Let us consider how the Spirit of the universe can send us forth to risk, to serve, to love, and how the church can be our much-needed ground and our resource. I will read the meditation, and then we'll have a few minutes quiet, private meditation. This is by Tess Baumberger. It's called, O Send Forth Me. O send forth me, Spirit, forth to do well my work, the work of my life, my living. May this my life touch healingly, lovingly, those in greatest need. May I bear witness to my faith, even when to do so seems too great a risk. O send forth me, Spirit, yet leave a taproot here to sustain me and to twine with roots of lovely, loving others whose spirits have welled a while with mine. O send forth me. Our spiritual lives are filled up. Our hearts are warmed by the giving of time, talents, love, comfort, and our many other human resources. We each receive from this church the opportunity to explore meaning, purpose, and value in our lives. How does the financial contribution you make here reflect what you receive? How does your collective money transform those within and beyond our congregation's walls? This morning's offering will be most sincerely and gratefully received. May it be lovingly given. Please join me in speaking the offering blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these are offerings. Each week, we take time to recognize the joys and sorrows, the celebrations and struggles of our community. We begin by taking one or more stones from the bowls at the back of the sanctuary or from the bowl up here, right down there. We allow the feel of those stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our lives. We then place the stones in the cleansing waters of this community. That water includes some of the water collected from our annual water communion. If you have joys, sorrows, celebrations, or struggles you wish to recognize, you are invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow. And Leslie will hold the bowl of stones. Down this aisle. Thank you. Thank you. Leslie, would you add a few extra stones there? We had a lot of joys and sorrows today. But let's add some stones for those suffering from discrimination and injustice of any kind, whether in our immediate community, our nation, or around the world. Let us add a few stones for members of our congregation who cannot be with us today. May we always be in each other's hearts. May we follow the principles we share so that respect, comfort, and support is available to all those in need, just as we ask others to respect, comfort, and support us. Okay, please stand in body or in spirit and join in singing number 1008, When Our Heart Is in a Holy Place. It's in the green hymnal. Be seated. This morning's reading is adapted from a poem called Saying No by Amy Shaw, a UU minister in Heartland, Wisconsin. The words are rousing. They speak to what we would like to be. But can we live them? I have a voice. It is a small voice, perhaps, but it will not be silenced. When you call for black people or protesters to be beaten and excluded and even removed, I will say no. When you attempt to silence Latinx voices, I will say no. When you mock the disabled and threaten the oppressed, I will say no. When you shout your plans for exclusion and division and terror, over and over again, I will say no and no and no, no matter the roaring crowds. If you build a wall, I will stand in the way of your builders. If they knock me to the ground, I will lie in their path. If you come for my Muslim siblings, I will force you to take me first. And I will not go quietly. I will say no. If you ask that they register, I will be Muslim or Jewish or black or Baha'i, and I will be at the head of the line over and over with each thing that you do. You will hear my voice ringing in the stillness, saying no. These words are brave and spirited. They speak to what most of us would like to be. But can we live them? Our sermon is offered today by Leslie Butler McMathaden. Leslie is an activist with the Ferguson Response Network and the Black Lives Matter Visibility Campaign. And she has also been written up, I understand, in UU World, so she's getting very famous.
Good morning, everyone. I'm so thankful for the invitation to be with you today and to share some time together. Now, I originally planned to talk about challenging institutions and leaving your comfort zone in the pursuit of a more just faith and society. But as I sat down to write my remarks, I kept coming back to a much more personal topic: transformation. A few years ago, I delivered a sermon at UUCCH in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, called The Unintentional Other. And in it, I examined my own connection to our first principle and why it called me to confront my own underlying elitism. I said in part, I couldn't help but ponder, how did I get here? Was it my grandmother's disdain pumping beneath the surface of my skin all these years? Was it my elite boarding school experience that had allowed this hidden prejudice to take root? Was it my college education, my friends, my husband, my job, my tax bracket? The answer was really simple. I had allowed myself to buy into the privilege of earned strength and unearned power that I had obtained as a well-educated, upper-middle-class American. I had bought into the privilege that allows us to ignore those that are less powerful than we are. This was just one stop on a transformational journey to love myself unapologetically, to love my blackness unapologetically, to commit myself to standing up for black people unapologetically. And I say one stop because real transformation has no end. For me, real transformation requires continual challenge to re-examine myself and my actions and my world. And every day, I confront the ways in which I buy into and participate in anti-blackness. Every day, I recommit myself to understanding what real black liberation would mean for my people. It would mean a world where our value has no conditions, where we deserve to thrive, not simply survive, where we carry out this work with love for each other, and most importantly, where those most affected are the voices that are most valued. Transformation is always talked about as if there's something magical, right? Snap of a wand and poof, you're transformed. But real transformation for me is about two powerful but simple things: commitment and consistency. So Black liberation history really backs me up on this notion of commitment and consistency. Whether we're talking about the Maroons of Jamaica or Mother Harriet Tubman and her Underground Railroad, the Montgomery bus boycott, the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, time and time again, we have watched commitment plus consistency lead to transformation. People often ask black organizers the question, I'm sure you've all heard it being here in Alton, what was so special about Ferguson, Missouri? And here again, we see the familiar combination of commitment and consistency lead to transformation on full display. Mike Brown's murder by the state inspired his community to make the commitment to take action, to leave their houses and their jobs and their families and take to the streets in civil disobedience, to say enough is enough, to say no more, And for over 100 days, his community took to the streets in protest. That's what we call consistency. Imagine that. Imagine doing something so disruptive to your life as protesting is for 100 plus days, risking arrest, risking injury, risking everything by choice, day after day and night after night. Consistency. Through their example of commitment plus consistency, a movement that was inspired by the murder of Trayvon Martin was transformed from a movement into a global call to action for Black lives. Commitment plus consistency equals transformation. Now, commitment requires inspiration. We as a faith, we are so good at being inspired. So good. We soak up inspiration. We take it from every source we can, to a fault. Everywhere we look, we find inspiration. But consistency, consistency requires repetition. I reference consistency when someone asks me, which I'm often asked as well, how do I show up for Black lives? And I always say, well, it's actually really simple. So you show up, and then you show up again, and then you show up again, and then you keep showing up until it becomes a habit. This brings us to the question that looms large for us as a people of faith. In the face of a global movement demanding action towards Black liberation, how can we be transformed? And how can our faith be transformed? Are you personally committed to Black liberation? And do you consistently live that out in commitment? Is this congregation committed to Black liberation? And does it consistently make decisions in alignment with that commitment? Is our UU faith fully committed to Black liberation? And does it consistently challenge long-held systemic practices that live up to that commitment? This past week, you may have heard that our UUA board took the bold step of committing $5 million in financial support to Black Lives of UU. This step is a fulfillment of a long ago promise to Black people of this faith. This first step in righting a wrong in our history, a painful one. But it's just that, it's just a first step. True transformation will require the board and the association and the faith to consistently show up for Black lives in ways big and small. I believe that we are a faith that can be transformed collectively and individually into the faith that we claim to be, into the faith that we all strive to be, into the faith that lives up to our principled belief in the dignity and worth of all people. Let us make the commitment to be consistent. Consistent in our lives, in our congregations, and in our faith, to say unapologetically and consistently, Black lives, they matter here. Thank you, and blessed be. I have more work to do, so hold on here. Please stand, embody our spirit as we sing our closing hymn, The Fire of Commitment. It's number 1028 in our green hymnal. May we extinguish our chalice, signaling the close of our communal worship service. May that light figuratively shine throughout our week, lending us as inspiration and strengthening our commitment to turn our UU principles into meaningful action. After our benediction and postlude, please come forward and join us in the worker room. I'm gonna assume that's back here, awesome, for a time of community. This benediction is entitled, Each of Us Ministers to a Weary World by Darcy Rourke. There's too much hardship in the world to not find joy every day. There's too much injustice in the world to not right balance every day. There's too much pain in the world to not heal every day. Each of us ministers to a weary world. Let us go forth and do that which calls us to make this world more loving, more compassionate, and more filled with a divine, graceful presence every day. Feel free to sit and enjoy the postlude by Nicole Robbins, and then join us in the worker room.